Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 10 of Turn Cloaks. Oh, my lord, double digits already, my friends. How exciting! We're back today with a full cast and crew. I myself am, of course, Will. I'm a D&D sex icon. Welcome, everybody, back to this most auspicious episode of Turn Cloaks, as we've got a lot of things going on today. Yes, indeed. Let's introduce the cast and crew, first of all, figure out who we are, who we're playing. Let's start with Josh. How you doing, Josh?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Nothing bad has ever happened to me in this game at all, and I look forward to that continuing that hot streak that I'm on of everything being okay and sunshine and happiness in my life when I play Charles Luna, who is entirely fine. Why do you keep asking? It's cool.
Why do you keep asking me? I'm fine.
I said I'm fine.
We got Joseph with us tonight. How you doing, Joseph?
I'm doing just great. I'm playing Tamarin, who's the human ranger of the group, and he's having a great time too. Things are just going exactly how we planned for them to go in this game. So,
yep, that's the story of all our characters. I feel very true. We have Torskull with us tonight. How you doing, Torskull?
I am doing good. Looking forward to see where this all goes with this new stuff that just happened. I am playing the White Crow, Alistair, and he is a plague doctor, which is sort of our version of low magic world cleric.
Yep. Awesome. And last but not least, we have Sydney with us tonight. How are you doing, Sydney?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to cry again. No question about it. I'm ready to get hurt again.
Good.
I'm playing Ari. She is a half-elf rogue. And caught in the fields.
Oh yeah, well luckily for you guys, I'm ready to hurt you all again as well. So we would do a recap for last episode. Unfortunately, it's pretty spoiler heavy for our players as they don't know what's going on. If you don't know, we ask them to take headphones off during some bits of play that they're not in to keep the game spoiler free. And so doing a recap would spoil one side for either three people or one person. So go back, listen to the last episode if you want to be 100% caught up on what's going on. And we're just going to dive right into it today and get to as much Turn Cloaks goodness as possible. We are going to begin in Arkenbury. So Josh, I'm afraid I'm going to ask you to take your headphones off real quick.
I see how it is. I see.
Yeah, you do. So let's cut to you guys. So Arkenbury has been restored, Lamurda has been restored to power, and refugees have begun flooding into the huge walls of Arkenbury, including Sir Richard and his men. The fight against the Blood Plague is beginning in earnest now, though it is like to gather unwanted attention too. A day has passed, and a meeting has been called for by Lamurda, inviting both Sir Renfrid and Sir Richard to the cathedral. Today is the day when that meeting will occur. Richard's scouts have gone looking for Luna and are to return today with information on his whereabouts. The halls of Arkenbury themselves are somewhat thronging at this point as the now freed four crows assisting people, treating them and using the same techniques that Alistair has learnt. Although you can tell that these guys are truly masters of their craft. There are things that Alistair could definitely learn from these guys as they set about their bloody business. And you see the line outside of Arkenbury, even after just one day, stretches all the way outside of the town. Now that the beacon is lit and the signal is clear that there is help for the Blood Plague. We're going to start with you guys, with Ori and Tamarin and Alistair this morning, within these thronging halls, just kind of looking down upon this and knowing that there is a meeting to happen. Alistair, yes, you can move from the seats. It's perhaps even just a symbolic thing that you sat in that table. You're not needed there all of the time. Although sometimes you will sit there for like a moment of reverie and well-being. But you guys, we find you just on a kind of, I guess, a parapet of the cathedral, looking down upon the thronging halls, knowing that you have to find your friend Luna. So I'll let you guys take it away.
It's so much. They're looking to me as though I've done something. I just sat in a chair, but it has changed everything. And there's so much that we didn't know, and I sort of look still guarded but hopeful towards Tamrin, and Ari sort of always kind of my strength a little bit in this moment. And it, tell me about your father. He was just the old crow to me.
Well, perhaps we should start with his real name.
Yes.
It was Gianna. He taught me everything. Taught me how to hunt, how to appreciate the forest, how to love. Unfortunately, it sounds like he was a different man when you met him. Born out of necessity for help for others. He was like that. He was never one to think only of himself. I wish I could have been there. When he died.
It was peaceful. He knew he was sick. We had helped so many. And the last stop was a horror. Like hell made manifest on Earth itself. But he never stopped. He never slept. He never relented to the plague. And while many died, some were saved. His hands moved almost so fast you couldn't follow them. But the days turned to weeks, the weeks to fortnights, and you could see it wearing on him. And when finally the time came to move on, he tried to hide it, but he had trained me. I could hear the little bit of wetness in his breathing, just a rattle. But after a few days, the rattle was a cough. And he knew. I think he guided us out to the forest that day, away from the road and into a beautiful glade. He made sure that he sat against a tree where he could see the moon, I'm sure of it. And under that light of that silver moon, he looked at me and just nodded. He never spoke to me, you see. Not till the very end. And he took off the mask, looked me in the eye, raised his chin, and asked for mercy.
You did the right thing. He loved the forest. At least I know. And when he died, he was home.
I buried him there. I still remember the place. Perhaps we could visit sometime. I'm sure he would like that.
I'd like to. I never got the pleasure of meeting him, but he does sound like an incredible man. And Tamrin, there's something you didn't mention that he did teach you. And you too, Alistair. He taught both of you how to inspire hope in people. Alistair, look.
And she gestures out of the window where we're looking down at people, and she says,
you didn't just sit in a chair and cause all this. You gave them hope.
You gave them something that they haven't felt in years. You did that. And Tamron, you're the only reason I have any hope left.
Tamron puts a hand on Ari's shoulder and brings her in close to him and just says, "You've always been a source of love. The crows were right about that. You are the reason that we are here." And he looks to Alistair. "There is a dawn of hope on the horizon, my friend. And you, brother, are the sunrise."
Alistair takes Tamron's hand in one of his hands and takes Ari's in the other. "One of our family, I think, is sorely in need of a sunrise. Let us see if we can find our other member and reunite this family so we can face whatever darkness the next night might bring." His voice is very, Alistair's voice is very sort of thick as he speaks.
At this point, you see the familiar figures of Sir Renfrid and Sir Richard arriving at the Arcabury Cathedral outside the gates. And you watch them exchange an icy greeting. They do not seem to be on the most friendly terms, but they seem to be working with one another. The two look up to see you guys and step through the crowds to meet with you. And Renfrid looks at the group, gives a nod and says, "I came right away. In fact, I was traveling at the time, and well, glad that I could be here. I'm sorry to hear that Charles has gone missing."
"We're going to find him."
"Yes, we do have a lead as to where he might be. The crows said that the masked figures that attacked us were agents of the Baroness Tulane. We have a feeling they may have taken him back to wherever she is, and that she must be using magic of some kind, dark magic, to resurrect these figures born out of the plague and make them do her bidding."
"Then they will have headed north. They can't have gotten far yet. Regan is leagues away." And Sir Richard nods and kind of like pushes in front of Sir Renfrid just a bit. And he says, "Aye, it's true. My scouts, they have spotted a band of masked individuals who have been headed northwards. I didn't follow them for long. They lost a track, but it must be them. I intend to take some of my scouts and head up that way. Help your friend. If you'd come with me." And Sir Renfrid puts a hand, like a mailed hand, on his shoulder and says, "I do not think that would be wise, my friend. I too have scouts in the area, and they have reported to me that Sir Wenton's knights are headed directly to Arkenbury." And he kind of like points upwards towards the ceiling where the beacon is at the top of the cathedral and says, "That light has called attention to more than just the refugees who need help. It seems as though a band of heavy cavalry is headed our way, that they will be here by nightfall. I have called for Landgrave Martell to bring reinforcements to aid us. But my friends, the situation looks dire." Richard's face darkens. "Aye, well, if that's the case, then we best get to seeing to your friend, Swift. I have some horses. We can travel faster than the masked individuals. Be back here by nightfall if..." And he looks towards Renfrid. "You and your men will set up defenses, I presume." And Renfrid nods.
"Renfrid."
"Yes."
"Your stalkers have secret entrances all over this land. Is there a way for us back in if you have to barricade Arkenberry? Is there a way for us to return so that we don't have to, you don't have to open the gates?
The Red Crow appears suddenly behind you all. You're not sure how long he's been there, if he's been listening to this whole conversation in the shadows or if he's just arrived. But he says, the entrance which you entered from, few know of it. It can not only be used as a flanking maneuver, but also a way in. It's hidden from normal eyes. And he looks down towards the many-eyed crow. He's tending to the wounded down below. And the red-eyed crow just, like, stalks off again downwards. And Renfrew says, damn, that guy's creepy. Is he always like that?
You get used to it.
We've truly just met.
Sends a shiver down one's spine. And Richard says, well, I hope when Winton's knights come that you show a bit of backbone. And Renfrew's face darkens dangerously.
We both have a common enemy here. We will go and return by nightfall. Certainly by morning light. Hopefully with Charles with us.
Quite. And Sir Richard says, well, we best stop fucking around and get to it then. And Renfrew, like, grits his teeth and sets about kind of ordering the men who have come with him to set up some defensive perimeters around the town. And Sir Richard leads you outside for the thronging masses. And of course, whenever Alistair, like, walks past the plague victims, they will all, like, call to you for a blessing. They think that you have some kind of magical or divine power that will save them, even those that are potentially dying from some, you know, wound or cut or something like that. So it is quite a cacophony of voices that will yell at Alistair as he, like, pushes his way through the crowd. But Sir Richard manages to, like, you know, throw away most of the people who are getting in your way. He's quite a big lad. And he leads you outside to some fresh horses. And he and two of his scouts, who he explains are the only men that he can spare if there is an attack on Arkenbury, will be coming with you. Saddle up. I haven't got any time to waste. Hope you can all ride.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
We don't have any time to waste either. We have to find our friend.
Let us be off.
He nods, saddles up, and the group of you race out of Arkenbury. There is a kind of warning bell, which is signaled within Arkenbury that the town will be under attack. And so people begin to flee into their homes. And the refugee line, however, remains outside. And as far as it's running outside of the town, and the way, from what you've heard of Sir Wenton's knights, it sounds like they will probably murder a good deal of refugees who are outside at this point. But there's no time to waste, and Sir Richard sets off at a breakneck speed into the woods headed northwards. We will cut back to Luna. Luna, it's been at least a day traveling with these masked figures. You've had a few other conversations with this female mask, the blood drinker that she is, and she has revealed her name to be Arlena, which I will post here. And from some other conversations that the other masked figures have had, you've managed to pick up her name. The others appear to not be named. She just refers to them by, like, pointing at them and just directly commanding them. And like automatons, they will obey. It's, as I mentioned, it's been at least a day. And you have been fighting against this drug which they've given you, whatever it is which kind of limits your capabilities. Arlena has boasted that that thing will stop you pretty much forever, or at least for as long as it will take you to get to wherever it is they're taking you. However, you have begun to feel its effects wear off. you have begun to notice that kind of tingle of energy is coming back to you.
Okay, he keeps that very much to himself. He's not back at his full faculty yet, but there's the smell of opportunity on the wind. So he is going to just pay attention, really, and try and figure out, like, he needs to know more about these people. So is there any opportunity where he's sort of alone with one of these guys where she's not around?
Yes, there is. You've had a few occasions where you've attempted to converse or just watch them. They seem unblinking, unmovable, and for all intents and purposes, like they're just dead. They don't seem like they have anything really going on for them. Arlena seems to be only one with any kind of intelligence to her that seems to be able to speak, and she seems to have a strange fascination with you, and in particular your eyes. So she seems like the one that's going to tell you anything, because she's already revealed a fair amount to you.
Mm. Okay, so he sort of... it's probably maybe a day before he realizes that, you know, if he's going to find out anything, he's going to have to talk to this crazy lunatic woman. So he starts off and just sort of says, "So you know of the plague and you know how it works."
She will squat down to look at you and kind of stare directly into your eyes from the mask, and there's that kind of dried encrusted blood from where she drank from the black vials before. She says, "Yes. Yes, of course."
"And how exactly is it that you came by this knowledge of it?"
"I was born from it, I suppose you could say."
"Okay, so you're plague born, but you're not like the others."
"Correct. I have been granted some intelligence in order to perform a certain array of tasks which require said intelligence. These," she looks around her, "are mindless slaves. They kill. But I think."
"And what makes you special?"
"I'm not really sure that anything does outside of mere chance. But that's okay."
"So you're entirely fine with being used like a pawn and then discarded once your benefactor is done with you?"
"This is the way of the world, Luna. This is no different than yourself. The way that the Eclipse has used you as a pawn in his own game and then discarded you. And as I understand the story goes, your wife, when they were no longer useful."
For a split second there, he genuinely wonders if he has a way of gouging his own eyes out just to spite that woman. That strikes a really bloody raw nerve with him. But he knows that there's only one way he's going to get out of this, and that's he's got to be patient. So he chokes down the anger and looks at her and just says, So, this being that created you, or this body, this person, this celestial, or whatever it is, who are they?"
She says, "I've been told not to reveal any information. Names have power."
"Or do you just not know?"
She shakes her head. "I know. But I've been told not to be baited into anything I don't want to talk about."
"And you don't want to talk about it with me because obviously I pose you such a threat at the moment, having..."
"You are perhaps the greatest threat to our world. That's why I need your eyes. So beautiful."
He gives her a sort of sideways glance. It's almost a compliment. "So, what do you get out of this afterwards?"
She stops to perhaps consider that for the first time. "Blood."
"You get to spill blood, or you get to have life What?
Both, I suppose, yes. One leads to the other.
And then what will you do with yourself when you have this new stolen life of yours?
I don't know. I suppose we will rule. I hadn't considered it.
You suppose we will rule? You haven't got the faintest idea what you're going to do.
I suppose not. I am merely a minion in this. I'm not privy to the innermost machinations of my master's desires.
You're not privy to free will.
Why, of course not. That would be foolishness.
So, let me get this straight. You're getting absolutely nothing out of this. You do all of this for nothing.
I live, I suppose. It brings me joy to serve.
Oh, I see. So you're shackled and collared like some kind of pathetic wild beast.
No more so than the peasantry of this land.
Oh no, more so even than them. You see, I've lived amongst the peasantry of this land, and I know that, well, while they may not have every luxury, they most certainly have the capacity to do great things. They have the capacity to change their stars. But you, you're just here to be moved around the board and then discarded. And that's sad. Even pathetic.
I suppose it is. Although I find no distaste in it. Nor do your insults hurt, for I feel complete.
So who were you?
I'm not sure that matters anymore.
So somebody has told you nothing. They have turned you to their will, and you think nothing of it because they told you not to think anything of it. You don't care if maybe you were actually someone who had more power, more influence, who had a great life ahead of them, who had great things that they'd achieved or would achieve. You just do because your master cracks the whip.
Oh, but I love my master.
I don't think you have any concept of what that word means.
Perhaps not by your definition. But nonetheless, I must take you there. And I must have your eyes.
And where exactly is there? Because you sure as shit can't do that out here in this awful place, and you can't do it at a campsite. You need somewhere safe, somewhere secluded, somewhere where you won't spoil me. So where exactly is it you're planning on taking me?
Oh, now, I know this game. I'm afraid I simply can't rise to it. You see, I have very few feelings.
Can I insight check this one? Because I kind of believe her. I do. I have a horrible feeling that whatever this is we're up against is this powerful. But there's a part of me that is just like, come on, please. Okay, that's an 11, so probably don't know too much about this girl.
You believe that she believes. She certainly seems to have this houndish dedication to whatever this thing her master is, and she certainly doesn't seem to be upset by your barbs.
Oh, wonderful. I'm going to die. He finally, I guess he's going to resign himself to quietly thinking over how he can best plan his escape. How many do they number?
There are a dozen of them.
Okay, that's far too many. I'll have to wait for their numbers to thin. So, Luna is going to continue to feign powerlessness as he waits for an opportunity to present itself.
Alright, so, headphones back on. The group of you are charging at breakneck speed through the woods with Sir Richard and his two scouts who are lightly armed and lightly mailed as well. And they lead you to the point that they have found the tracks where they sighted these masked figures. Now, you're going to have to be traveling for several hours through the woods in order to catch up with them. They have been moving slower, it would seem like, perhaps because they have a prisoner and they can only go as fast as their slowest person. And they are not on horseback either, so the speed which you are traveling across through the forest is pretty fast, and Sir Richard's men know Arkenbury Forest unlike anyone else. So it is by almost around dusk, maybe an hour or two before dusk falls, that you guys arrive at this set of tracks that the scouts have found. Sir Richard jumps down from his horse and points towards them and says, "They can't be far from here. Now, my best guess is there's still a lot of them from when we saw them last time, the fucking bastards. So our best chance would be to rush in, grab your friend Charles, and run the fuck out again.
If we can avoid any kind of combat, that would be great." And he kind of touches the scar on his chest from the last time he got butchered by one of those awful things.
Aye, the fuckers are nasty for sure. You got that bow still on hand? Looks towards Ori.
Absolutely.
I actually looks towards Ori.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah, he says, "Sorry, lad, but she got on a few good shots back there."
I might need to borrow it again.
Right, no. He looks at one of his scouts. He points towards him with a come hither gesture with his finger. And the scout hands over his shortbow and hands it to Ori. Better in your hands than his.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. He jumps back on the horse and says, "Right, let's get him back."
Right.
Yes. Are we creeping up on them? Do we kind of get the lay of this ambush? Is there...
Sir Rich's plan is to pretty much dive in at breakneck speed.
Okay, so it's a hit and run.
It's going to be a hit and run, pretty much.
Okay.
So you and the kind of small cavalry brigade that you guys are in at this point continue charging, following the tracks as best you can for the next 30 minutes or so, until breaking round a corner you hear a cry from one of the scouts who's leading up ahead, which signals that he's found something. Charles, put back on your headphones, Josh. So, Luna, they have, like, stopped around dusk with you, Alana, and her masks. And you hear the sound of, like, the ground rumbling. Like, your like, hand is to the ground and you feel vibrations in the earth. And you look behind you as the camp is kind of set out with a dozen or so masked individuals, and you see horses breaking round the corner into the camp, and there's a fair amount of chaos as you see Sir Richard, Ori, Tamrin, the White Crow, and two of Sir Richard's scouts break into the camp, and chaos ensues. It's time for us to roll some initiative.
Oh, buddy.
I rolled a 16.
A 10.
17, the perfect number.
17 as well.
And the dex bonus for both of you is tied. Who would like to go first between Tam and Luna?
I'll let him go first, as I am in all of the trouble right now.
Okay.
All right, so we have Alena and the mask figures are going on a 22. But, however, you guys have broken into the camp with a surprise round, meaning that you guys will get a chance to act before these masked individuals even know what is going on at this point. So, Tamrin, you break into the camp at breakneck speed, you hear the scouts cry, you look into the camp, you see Luna in between two of these masked individuals with heavy glaives, his arms are tied, his legs are tied, he looks malnourished. Several of these masked figures have blood dripping down from their white masks, their white porcelain masks at this point, and they have black vials on their belts. And the lead feminine masked figure is about 20 feet away from Charles at this point. You guys are roughly 60 feet away from them.
Alrighty. So I'm going to kind of ride, I want to say another 20 feet until I'm about 40 feet from them, and kind of post up there, take out my bow, and take a shot at one of the ones that's standing next to Luna.
Okay. Give me an attack roll.
So that's a dirty 20.
Dirty 20 is going to hit.
All right. Wonderful. And that is 8 points of damage.
Nice. So you shoot the right-hand figure to Luna with the mask and pierce an arrow into its shoulder. It does not die, but it does take a step backwards. Luna, it's your chance. You see your friends enter into the clearing. You see Hope arriving.
Luna sees this guy who's standing next to him, and he is, as he gets hit, he will bring his hands up and try and grab this guy. And in doing so, he's going to let some rage out. So I'm going to try and shocking grasp him for a 16.
16 is dead on. Tell me how you kill this figure.
Oh, fantastic. So he grabs nice. This guy and he grabs him, and his hands are bound, so he's simultaneously sort of like trying to choke him with his binds, and just puts his hand one on either side and just surges lightning between the two palms and tosses him backwards, and then he's just going to break into a sprint towards his friends.
You feel him roasting, and you smell that same charred flesh and blood boiling in the mask as you slay that figure. Alistair.
So is there was another one that was close by Luna, correct?
There is one, close to Luna.
So I pull out of my little pouch that is filled with salt, another sodium dagger, which is how I cast Guiding Bolt, and give it a shot. On a 12, I'm riding the horse, I throw it and it misses its mark. It goes by this person's head and explodes on the ground behind him.
Yeah, at this point, the mask figures are kind of like becoming aware of what's going on. They are like moving around for the edges of the camp to move in on Luna. And you see the feminine figure shout, "Get him! Get him back!" Ori, it's your turn. Luna is running towards you guys.
Okay, so... is there anyone that's still close to him then, since if he's...
He is moved, but there is... these guys are about to react and are all about to move on to him.
Okay. So how close is the closest one then to him?
20 feet.
Okay. Then I'll just use my short bow on that one. For an 11.
I ain't gonna do it, I'm afraid.
Nope.
All right. Anything else? Do you want to move at all?
No.
All right. Top round one. So no longer in surprise. And the mask figures rolled a 22 on their initiative roll. So it's the masks, Tam, Luna, Alistair, and Ori. So they are going to move in first. Several of them move in to Sir Richard's scouts, moving with a surprising agility and speed towards them, an almost supernatural speed. And the figure that was on the left to Luna is going to move in towards him and attempt to take him down. A 19 versus your armor class. That was a ridiculously good roll.
That hits.
You will take 7 points of damage as it brings its glaive across you with a hiss, and you hear it swinging through the air, slicing and making that kind of chiming noise that metal does when it sweeps through the air really swiftly. You watch as Sir Richard's scouts are cut down by figures with the glaives. They just took a whole ton of damage right there. You watch them being like just butchered, essentially. Their horses are cut down as well. The glaives go for the legs of the horses to take them out from underneath them, and with one swinging blow, you see the front legs of the horse being sliced off. The animal falls down onto the ground. With the second hit, the other glaive brings it down across the head of the scout who led you into here. And at this point, The female moss figure is going to move towards Alistair, seeing as you just cast that sodium dagger towards the group, an explosion went off, and she runs towards you as she draws her glaive and says, "You should have stayed there." 22 versus your armor class.
Oh, that hits.
You take minimum damage of 4. As she kind of like, she slices into you and it bites through the armor, but only a little bit, finding a slight chink in the armor there. Tamarin, it's your turn.
All right.
So Richard cries, "Get the fuck out of here!"
So how far is Luna from me at this point?
Well within, you know, a move range on a horse.
Okay. So I'm going to ride my horse the rest of the way up to him. And as it's moving, I'm going to attempt to get in another shot at the one that took a swing at him. And that is not going to hit at all. So
yeah,
I guess
as
the horse... So I rolled a 6. So as the horse is just jostling me along, it just flies off. But as soon as I get to Luna, I reach my hand down and motion for him to come up onto the horse. Try and pull him up there.
Absolutely, yeah. You realize that fighting from horseback is a far different task than when stationary. So, yep, the arrow just kind of whizzes off into the woods, and you reach down a hand to help up Luna, whose turn it is now.
Luna is going to, try and reach out, and he is bleeding badly. That did a lot of bad things to Luna. So he staggers towards you and reaches out sort of a blood-soaked hand to try and pull himself up onto the horse as it's moving. What kind of... Is that an acrobatics check, maybe, to swing myself up?
I tell you what, you would take an attack of opportunity here, but if you can roll a successful acrobatics or athletics to pull the Legolas move, then you can avoid the attack of opportunity.
So what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to use a little monkiness. Monkness, not monkiness. Two entirely different things. As I am going to spend a key point... to use the disengage act and step of the wind. So as he's running forth, he suddenly just jets forward, dodging nimbly out of the way, and it doubles my jump distance. So I'm going to sort of jump and try and hopefully not land too badly, as I'll still make my acrobatics check, because I imagine this could go quite badly for me.
Yeah.
A 19.
19 is pretty damn good. With surprising agility and nimbleness for his age, Luna jumps up onto the horse with Tamarin, managing to avoid the glaive swing of the masked figure looking to slice through his back. And you are successfully on the horse at this point. Alistair, it is your turn.
How far away is my horse from Tamarin and Luna's?
All within 60 feet at this point. You know, you guys can easily make a move on a horse to get to one another.
So I move until I move until I get like within 30 feet of them galloping by. I sort of reach out with my hand and.
Do you reach out towards Luna?
I'm not touching you. I'm just sort of, I'm 30 feet away and I'm sort of pointing my hand.
He just shouts,
at you.
"Don't."
And it looks as though blood bursts from all of Luna's orifices as I cast Sanctuary on him.
Okay.
And as though, that he has either died or that he, has the plague, so that they have to make the wisdom saving throw to try to attack him.
All right, then.
And as my bonus, because I can do this, because that's a bonus action to do Sanctuary, I am going to try to drop Sacred Flame on the head lady.
Mm.
Dexterity DC 12 save.
All right. Rolled a 20.
Yeah, so nothing happens. So Alistair, yeah, nothing happens. He basically, yeah. he tries to throw some sodium in her face, and it just blows in the wind.
Yeah, doesn't seem to affect her mask, perhaps protects her from that. All right, so that takes it to Ori's turn.
Okay, I will aim with a short bow again against any that are seem to be coming towards me or Luna or any of us. The one that's closest.
Okay.
19.
19's going to be a hit.
Okay, and are any of them close enough to Luna, like, for me to add sneak attack?
Yeah, they're within 5 feet. They're attacking the horses.
Yeah, okay. Max damage! Max damage! Oh my god!
How do you kill this masked figure?
Whew, that's so exciting. So are they on horses?
No.
Okay. Then I'll just aim sort of like downwards at him, and I want it to go like sort of in an angle, like straight through the throat and like almost down, kind of pointing towards the chest.
Yeah.
And just
because of your height,
pin him to the ground.
Okay. Yeah. The force of the arrow will throw him back. More likely, pin it to a tree that's nearby.
Yeah.
As the figure is kind of skewered upon it with a sickening squelch. Nice. It's top of round two. The masked figures get their turn. Lena is going to attempt to attack Luna. However, she has to roll a wisdom saving throw in order to do so.
Yes.
She rolled a 12 on the die.
It's my DC. Spell DC is a 12.
Oh, so she just saves. So she is going to get the chance to hit Luna.
Yep.
In fact, it may even be that the blood on Luna encourages her even further. You feel her hungering. It's going to be a 6 versus your armor class, Luna.
Luna, just as he sees her coming in, he just barely able. He's clinging to consciousness at this point, but he turns around and sort of crackles energy between his fingertips. So he just crackles energy between his fingertips and stares into her eyes and says, "You have failed to contain me, and you have spoken too much." As hopefully he is carried away from this place.
Yep.
Please,
all right,
please.
All right. So, yes, let's see. Let's see if the other masters, they move in to attack Sir Richard, have any luck. That'll be a miss, and that'll be a miss. You watch Sir Richard block two glaive hits, basically just on his shield, and you watch the kind of force of the wood being splintered and broken upon his pretty simple wooden shield, and you kind of cast it aside, and you see him turn, and his horse is running out of here now that he sees Luna has been relatively saved. And he is charging, sprinting back the way he came, and it turns to the party's turn, really. We've got Tamron, Luna, Alistair, and Ori all going at the same time. Is there anything you guys are doing to avoid attacks of opportunity at this point?
Get out.
I'll let you act as a kind of group now.
I can use bonus actions, my cunning action, to disengage or hide or dash. So I'd probably try to do that.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, okay.
I actually throw one of the sodium daggers like onto the ground, like as a, not even try to hit someone, just as a distraction, as sort of this bright light, of radiant energy just sort of explodes to try to just do something so that we can double dash our way out of here.
Great, yeah. It's like a, you send like a flash grenade to almost back at them, which kind of like sends them, you know, their eyes clearly are damaged by the sight of this. Anything Tam or Luna would do? Also, I'll give you guys a quick attack of opportunity.
Geez, at that point, I guess Tam is just, he's steering the horse as best he can to get it to turn around and get out of there.
All right. Luna, you got any tricks in the bag?
Luna will just put himself, like, essentially try and shelter Tam with himself. If anyone's going to get hit.
All right, well, in that case, as you're kind of sheltering him, They will have to roll wisdom saving throws to attack you. Beat a 12. This guy rolled an 11. So the first attack, he just like goes there. He goes to like swing at you, and then you hear from behind the mask,
"The gateway."
And he stops. And the next figure rolls a 6 and pretty much does the same thing. Just like stops and says,
"The gateway."
And you guys flee the scene along with Sir Richard sprinting away on your horses, who at this point have undoubtedly taken several cuts and wounds. Several of the other horses have been left behind as they've been completely maimed. And the other scouts you leave behind as well, as they have been brutally murdered. And as you guys flee away into the sunset, on a happy note, for once, we will end tonight's episode of Turncloaks.
I hate you so much.
Oh my god. That
feels good. It's the little victories.
It's the little ones.
Little tiny victories.
It makes you appreciate them. Right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's not as though you've got, like, a whole heavy brigade of cavalry coming down on Arkenbury to attack you tonight. So you'll be fine.
Can you not? Like,
you guys be, oh wait, no, you do have, yeah,
yeah,
okay.
You're not funny. Yeah.
yes I am. So hopefully you guys enjoyed tonight's episode 10 of Turncloaks. I know that we certainly had a great time over here. We're going to read out one of your wonderful 5-star reviews here on iTunes and Stitcher. If you haven't left one yet, be sure to read one. If you haven't left one yet, be sure to fuck me. Don't do that.
If you haven't read one yet, make sure you fuck me.
Just fuck me.
Make sure.
If you haven't read one yet, be sure to write one so that we can read one out. So, today we are going to read one out from Pierrot 606, High Quality Storytelling. It's from the US. Turncloaks is a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition dark fantasy actual play podcast with a strong emphasis on storytelling. Rarely do the players break character, and there are episodes where not a single die is rolled. The story takes place in Penumbra, a land where life was rough and unforgiving even before the Blood Plague began to ravage one village after the next. Nobody knows where this terrible disease comes from, and no known cure exists. People live in fear, terrified that a harmless cough might turn into coughed up blood. Once the infection begins to bleed from their orifices, they know that their days are numbered. On the eve of political unrests, the like that might very well plunge the land into an all-out civil war, the four unlikely heroes of this adventure, brought together by chance, decide to do whatever is in their power to investigate the origin of the Blood Plague and put an end to it. All four have gone through times of misery and pain. What they need are allies and companionship, but can they trust one another? Week after week, Dungeon Master Will and his cast bring to the table a quality of storytelling that makes you look forward to each new episode. Moreover, Turncloaks offers just the right amount of audio effects and music that add atmosphere without distracting from the story. Wow, that's like
Can we hire that person to do the recap?
Yeah,
because I'm rubbish
you do
at recaps.
Pierre for that, yeah, that's like a official like movie critic material right there. I appreciate that a great deal. If you guys want yours read out, write one for us. We'd love to read them every single episode of Turncloaks. Let's go around the cast and crew real quick. Do we enjoy ourselves? Where can we find one another online? Of course, you can find Turncloaks at TurncloaksPod on Twitter and myself at EncounterRP. Let's start with Josh. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Turncloaks, generally sort of suffering and crying in silence as I harbour secrets that I need to tell the party about, and they're all like, hey, we got a victory, and we need a conversation, guys. Also, you can find me on Encounter Roleplay, doing Encounter Roleplay things, which is slightly less dreary and grim. Sometimes it's been known to happen on occasion.
It's happened. Incredible. Sydney?
That was really, really awesome. I'm glad we're all back together now so we don't have to keep so many secrets from each other. Yeah, I'm Sydney, and you can follow me everywhere, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube at SydneyEck, and then I'm the Dungeon Master for WonderQuest Podcast, which you can follow on Twitter at WonderQuestPod.
So cool.
Yeah, it was great fun. Always fun to have some combat. Eventually, I will hit someone with my guiding bolt at some point. I don't know. But it was fun. I really enjoyed it. You can find me all over social media at Tall Squall, and find links to all of the other things that I do from there. Hope to see you. Say hi. Say you found us through Turncloaks.
and Joseph.
Oh boy, another, an actually good episode where we kind of end on a happy
it's
note.
It's not, you guys don't know.
It's, yeah, we don't. I mean, so yeah. So we'll see how ignorant next episode goes. So what we think is good, but as always, the story goes where the players can only follow. So you can find me on Twitter at JosephIsNotFast. Thank you guys so much.
Incredible. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this episode 10 of Turncloaks. We can't wait to see you guys again next week. Tweet your ideas, your conspiracy theories at TurncloaksPod, or just let us know how many bags of tissues you've had to go through this week. Do tissues come in bags?
No.
They do now. They do in Turncloaks.
Turncloaks, they do, yeah. Garbage bags. It's how many garbage bags you filled with tissues.
Check out Turncloaks' official merchandise. It's just tissues.
Bags of tissues.
Kleenex boxes.
That's it, yeah. Well, thank you guys for joining us for tonight. And until next week, try not to throw too many net ones. We want to be stuffing tissues into our bags when you do. Good night.